Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit.
Welcome back to another GeoMob Podcast. Today is a really exciting day. My guest this morning is Dennis Bouzos, who's the principal software engineer at Geolytics, who are a wonderful GeoMob sponsor. And Dennis has been probably at every GeoMob that we've had for the last decade. He's an open sourcer. He's also an Arsenal supporter, which is a pretty good thing. And all of that's great. And it will be lovely just to have Dennis on the podcast to talk. But Dennis is also the chair of the team that are bidding for Phosphor-G 2027 to bring Phosphor-G back to the UK and host it in Bristol in the summer of next year. And that's really exciting for me. It's exciting because if they succeed in bringing Phosphor-G to Bristol, it will be 14 years after I chaired the first UK Phosphor-G in Nottingham. And I'm really thrilled that they asked me to be part of their bid team. So we're going on a journey together, Dennis, aren't we?
Yes, we are indeed. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for inviting us. Absolutely excited to talk to you and even more excited talking about Phosphor-G. Quick note in regards to your introduction, I will be the co-chair, because Phosphor-G is all about community and we don't have chairs. We have multiple co-chairs, and without my fellow co-chairs, about which I will talk later to you, that would not be possible. I mean, it's all about having a strong team.
Good point. So what we're going to do is we're going to follow Dennis and the team on the journey from writing a letter of interest or letter of intent to hopefully hosting a massively successful Phosphor-G conference in Bristol in the summer of 27. We're going to host a few podcasts. We're going to talk to Dennis probably at about 6 monthly intervals, not definite, but something like that. So a couple more episodes, podcasts before the event, and then I've got an ambition to do some in-the-field interviews when we actually get to Bristol, but we'll talk about that later. So, Dennis, start us off. Tell everybody what Phosphor-G is. There might be some people who don't know what Phosphor-G is.
I would love to do this. At the core, I mean, what is Phosphor-G? Phosphor-G is an abbreviation and stands for free and open source software for geography. Free and open source software, we all should know a lot about. And for geography, I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory, although I always like to say phosphor good, like, because geography can mean so many things. And Phosphor-G it's an initiative. I mean, that's what it is. It's an initiative of OSGeo. OSGeo being a software foundation concerned with all things promoting open source in the geography sector.
Okay, so this is a big conference, isn't it?
It is a very big conference. I mean, there are other conferences in the geo sector, such as Geo Business or InterGeo. But for us, for OSGeo, the foundation concerned with the promotion of open source software for geography, Phosphor-G is the biggest event. It's an annual event. There are smaller events, regional events, local events. Local events mean national events. So we have OSGeo UK is a local chapter of OSGeo, and we are running local events like Phosphor-G UK, about which you talked in a very recent GeoMob podcast. And so the Phosphor-G, the global, so when we don't specify, that is the international event staged once a year in different countries on different continents, and we expect to invite about 800 delegates.
Okay, right. It's big. It's 3 days plus workshops. It's hundreds of speakers. It's massive. I know how massive it is from having chaired one. Why are the UK team bidding to host it in 27?
Well, as we previously talked, somebody's got to do it. So if nobody puts their hand up and says, we want to do it, then it's not going to happen. And so there are a couple of possible scenarios. It's not happening. That would be tragic. But even worse would be if somebody says, okay, we're going to do it, but then they don't deliver. So we obviously love Phosphor-G and we were like going there. So the first scenario where there will not be a Phosphor-G to go to, that would be really sad for me. So we were very close to that event previously when I was at the Phosphor-G event in Kosovo. And by the time the Kosovo event happened, nobody said, oh, okay, there's not going to be a Phosphor-G next year. So at the event, we talked to the OSG president and the organizers of the Phosphor-G and said, okay, if nobody does it, I think we can do it in the UK. But fortunately, Belém, Tatiana in Brazil, put her hand up and said, okay, let's do it in South America, because sadly, during COVID, it was planned in Argentina and didn't happen. So it went to Belém. And I already said at that point, okay, if it falls through or in a future year, we would like to do it. But back at that time, we didn't have the experience. So last year, we did Phosphor-G UK, which I co-chaired, and it was really successful. And kind of like garnered interest in the UK to do an event like this again, but bigger. And so during the event, we talked with volunteers and asked them, like, well, would you be up? Like, we can't do it alone. Like, would you like to join a team? Would you like to have meetings and discuss whether we can do a European or even the global Phosphor-G event? And we believe the UK is a fantastic place for that, because we have such a big team. We have a really strong industry. We have like organizations like the AGI. We have companies who use OSGEO and sponsored Phosphor-G in the past. And we have you. We have experience. We have a team which has done it before. So we can say, okay, we know what we're doing. Like, we hope we can deliver.
So you're, I mean, it's very nice for you to say nice things about me, and you can carry on doing that. I don't mind. But you're absolutely right. You need a team to host a Phosphor-G event. It's a big undertaking. You know, I can't remember exactly, but I think we had a core team working for 18 months of about 12 or 14 people. We had, I don't know how many volunteers actually during the conference, but we had an organizing committee of 12 or 14 people, and most of them were working hard on this event, on different sides of this event. So I know how important that team is. So without naming everybody, who have you got on the team? You know, who are your co-chairs? Who are the people that we might know? Who are the people, you know, what kind of people have we got on the team?
I reckon you will know most of them. So the most important, the co-chairs is Paul Whittle and Ilya Spark Santos. And Paul Whittle was actually the person who initiated the idea. Yes. Because, as you said, it's so much work. And after at Phosphor-G Leeds, I was kind of like, okay, I don't think I'm going to do that again straight away. And my wife also said, well, you're not going to do that again. And Paul Whittle talked to me and said, well, how about we do it again, but bigger? And I'm like, okay, are you going to co-chair? And he said, yeah. And I'm, okay, if you do it, I'm going to do it. And Ilya straight away came in as well, because we knew it can't be in London for various reasons. And so Ilya is based in Bristol, and we did a Phosphor G local in Bristol. And it's an exciting city. So that was the first decision. We said, okay, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it in Bristol. So we're looking for people who are based in Bristol, because local support is so important. And we're also looking for organizations, like people who work in organizations. And so, without naming anyone, the universities are, there's a big academic track, and University of Leeds, Wyoming, who helped us with Leeds, he's going to be involved again. Other organizations such as Map Action and Geovation and Ordnance Survey, people from there will be involved, like Ann Scott, who's like very involved with like previous events and the whole OSGEO UK. Nick Behrman, who is a chair of OSGEO UK at the moment, and comes from the Bristol region and is involved in academia and teaching, so he will be involved. Joe Alnott of Ordnance Survey and Jonathan Lewis of the Geovation Hub, and then all the people from like companies like Aston, MapTiler, CGI, iDocs, they will be on the team, because money is needed, but experience and, as you said, time, that's the most important part. Claire Bieni will be there, and Hot OSM will send somebody. And the important bit to understand with the time is we gotta have to share it. So you said you had 12 people, we already have 20 people on our list, and we will need everyone, and we will need more. And once the event happens, we will need volunteers, and I reckon a minimum of 30 volunteers, probably more. And those will usually be students. And since we host the event at the University of Bristol, we are counting on a majority of the volunteers to be from the University of Bristol, but also academics like my old university, UCL CASA, University of Leeds, University of Nottingham, Edinburgh. It's a UK event. It's not just England. So Wales, Scotland, and English academic institutions will be involved.
Great. There is so much to do in the planning stages and then in the delivery phase. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You need the volunteer. So let's get to the bid status. Where are we up to? Tell us what's happened and what's happening.
Well, we submitted our letter of intent, which was unopposed, as in we are the only organization, the only team who submitted a letter of intent. And we submitted this to the conference committee. So the conference committee is mostly former co-chairs or other people involved with OSGEO who have to approve our letter of intent. So there are certain considerations, such as is the UK a suitable environment? Do they think that we can do it? And then they approve the letter of intent. So that will be a vote of, I think it's 12 members, and half of them, so six votes are needed, like a plus one on the mailing list, which says, okay, go ahead and bid. So we are kind of at that stage, but also we are kind of after the stage, because we were expecting the vote to happen last Friday, but it didn't happen, or we were not told about it to happen. So I sent an email earlier this week and asked, like, have you considered our letter of intent, and could you just let us know? Okay, we know you're the only one, but just can you confirm, please go ahead and create a proper bid, like the long form bid document, and hand it in. And so that's the stage where we are now. We just go ahead for now. We're going to start creating the bid document and hope at some point in the next couple of days, the conference committee will tell us, yes, please do that. We're going to be proactive. So that's the stage where we are. And the timeline for this is March. So as you know, these timelines, they're kind of a bit flexible yeah. in regards to the conference committee. But we need to have a timeline ourselves. So, and that is, I say, middle of March, 15th of March, we're going to submit a full bid document to the conference committee. And then they need to do the same. They need to vote, okay, 12 people voting. And if six say yes, then we go ahead and have a Phosphor G.
So I think this has happened before where there's been only one bidder and conference committee's approach has always been to say, you've still got to produce a full proposal. And I think it's a great idea. I think looking back to when we did this, and I guess we did this the end of 2011, beginning of 2012 for the 2013 event, it got us to think through the economics of the conference, the budgets, the ticket prices, how many tickets we needed to sell. It got us to think about catering and all sorts of things, you know, lots of practical things. Running a conference is, I mean, you need a stream of people working on practical things, you know, really simple things like registration systems and lanyards and all that sort of stuff. And at the same time, you need another group of people working on the content, you know, how, you know, you're going to get hundreds of proposals from speakers and you've got to filter that down. And so there's a hell of a lot to do, and preparing the bid really helps because it gets you to think, it gets people to sort of on the organizing committee to put their hand up and say, I'll write that bit. And then once they've written it, they can own that bit going forwards, you know, because the plan was theirs and they can take it forward as we start to build the event. So I think it's even though you may be the only bidder, I think it's a really good process. And I think the bid will benefit, the team will benefit, you know, you will have the team will be bonded through that process. So good idea. You talked about volunteers. And I don't know how big the facilities at Bristol are, but from, you know, thinking back to when we did this at Nottingham, we had 10, 12 streams, I think, running parallel to each other, you know, certainly 8 streams. And you need volunteers in each of those rooms to make certain that the AV works and that the speaker's in the right place at the right time and all that stuff. You know, I mean, you know, taking the microphones around for questions, it goes on and on. So you certainly need one or two volunteers for every session, you know. So you're going to need a lot of volunteers.
As you said, it's streams is a good point because times have massively changed since Nottingham. And nowadays it is expected that the event will be hybrid because not everybody can come to Bristol. So we need to stream every session. And that takes work. Like, that's not just like the microphone. Somebody has to operate the camera. And then later on, we want to preserve the videos and make them available through platforms like YouTube because people might be in different time zones and they cannot be up at like 1 a.m. to follow like a stream of an interesting talk, and they want a reference further on. So it's not just volunteers are needed before the event, but also after the event. Somebody has to edit all the video, make it available. During the event, people have to know where they are. So it's not just in a session, but where is the session? Somebody has to be at the door and direct people where to go. Some of this stuff is not even related to geography. As you say, it's a big event. 800 people have to be fed. They need to eat something. So there will be caterers. And we got to have to break this up, like make it available for everybody to attend. And that means Some people may be hard of hearing. Some people may be in a wheelchair. We need to absolutely make and ensure that everybody who wants to attend can attend. And that's like, at the beginning, you don't think about this because, you know, we're geographers. We're not like social people like who organize conferences. So we think, okay, yeah, we know our geography. We know how present at an event and all this. But like catering, for example, it's like, what are your dietary requirements in Leeds? And I'm like, okay, we're going to have to think about this.
Yeah, and you're going to need, you need to have physical accessibility. You need to have other kinds of accessibility. I mean, as a 75-year-old man, looking back 13 years to when we ran in Nottingham, things have changed a lot. You know, there's stuff now that you have to think about that we didn't even know existed. There's a lot to do, and I remember we had to write a code of conduct. And there was only one person on my organizing committee who even knew what a code of conduct might look like. And that wasn't because we were bad people. It was just because we were coming from a different time and times were changing. And all of a sudden, and we got to the point where it was expected that you would have a code of conduct. And it was absolutely right that we had a code of conduct. But, we didn't know how to do that then. Now, of course, you do know that.
It's great that you mentioned a code of conduct because, as I said, OSG and Phosphor G, we are a very inclusive community. That means our main priority is diversity. That's not just for the delegates, but also for the organizers. We don't want to be a panel of like 12 middle-aged white men telling...
Well, you won't be 12 middle-aged white men if you have me. You'll have one at least senior citizen. But no, I get what you mean.
So that is also the reason why we are the only bidder, because for obvious reason, the North American, OSG or North America, held their hand up and said, we would like to organize a Phosphor G in the U.S., but that's not currently possible. Hence, we would support your bid in Bristol. And that's a big responsibility. So, as you said, the code of conduct is not just at the event, but also before the event and after the event. Like, we have to be respectful to all backgrounds of every delegate. And that is a main mantra of diversity.
I don't know whether we were the first Phosphor G to do this, but we certainly had a travel grant program. It was a small program at the time, but we managed to bring, it enabled us to bring a few people. I think they were mainly students that we were bringing at that stage, but...
We still have it. We still have the travel grant program, and it's growing, and it's amazing, and we will have a travel grant program, but that requires money. So where does the money come from? It comes from the sponsors, but it also comes from the community. So the idea is tickets will not be cheap, because if you buy a ticket, you're not just buying a ticket for yourself. The travel grant lives from the money generated by the Phosphor G event. So if you buy a ticket for, let's say, £400, it is assumed that £100 from this ticket go into the travel grant, allowing delegates from less economic strong countries or regions to attend the event. And that's also why the UK is a great location, because previous Phosphor Gs may not have generated as much money as wished for, which leaves us in a pickle. So we need, or we're saying, we can provide an event which generates money And as you know, we are a non-for-profit organization. So the reason why we need and want to generate money is to make the event great and accessible through the travel grant.
Great. Okay. And also, that reminds us that we're going to need sponsors. And it's very early because we're not even confirmed as the hosts of the event. But sponsors, if you're out there, start thinking about how you'd like to be engaging with Phosphor G27 in Bristol. So I've got a question for you, and you sort of touched on it earlier. Do you know how much work you're taking on, Dennis? You and your co-chairs? Does your wife know?
Well, obviously I know it through Leeds, which was, in my own opinion, always going to be a test run for a bigger event. And I hope it doesn't scale like that, where we say, okay, Leeds, we are 200 delegates and we spent that amount of time. Bristol, we have 800 delegates, so it's going to be four times as much time. We assume it will be maybe twice as much time involved, but because the team is also bigger.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a lot of time. And as I said, sponsors not just giving money, because all of the volunteers and under OLRC, we are all full-time employees of a company or another. And you can't organize the Phosphor G on weekends. So you got to have to put some time in during the day. You cannot say, okay, can we have a meeting on Sunday afternoon to talk about sponsorship? Like, you got to have to do this during working hours. So my own employer, Geolytics, they offered that I can take some time to organize the event. And the same is true for everybody else on the LOC. Whichever company they're working for, whether it's CGI or IDOX or MapTiler or Aston, these companies allow their employees to work on the LSE. So it's their employers who are donating time.
As well as money, yeah.
As well as money, and yeah. That's yeah. Absolutely required.
And as from one chair to another, if I could give you one bit of advice, it is delegate, delegate, delegate. The co-chairs cannot do everything. No one or even two people can carry the load and make this happen. So, you know, you have to have a team that you trust, and you have to then place your trust in them and let them get on with it, and believe that it will all come together. And it will do, and it will be fantastic. And, you know, looking back, I can say that this was one of the best things that I did in my career in GEO. It was a fantastic experience. I made a lot of friends. You know, you're talking about people on your LOC now. Several of those people are the same people who were on the LOC 13 years ago. I made friends. I had a fantastic time. And when we wrapped up the conference and we all went out for lunch after everyone had gone home, I was absolutely exhausted and I needed a holiday. So
you're not the first, because I talked to every previous like conference chair, like Vasily in Romania, who I think he slept under the lectern. Like on Thursday night, I was talking to him at like 5 a.m. and he went to the venue and slept under the lectern for the last session. And his colleagues came in, you're up early. I'm up early. So, but everybody said exactly the same, as it was in their professional career an absolute highlight. And And also they recommended, like, do not forget to enjoy the event because it's a once in a lifetime event. Enjoy it. And that's what I'm doing, because I enjoy the social aspect, talking to peers, people who I call friends, and some of them I've seen like every year, but only once a year. So I'm really looking forward to see these people. And that's why I'm looking forward. That's why I'm doing it. Like I'm enjoying the event, and that's why I'm willing to give the time for me too. And everybody me too. Else to enjoy.
I mean, when you said that, Dennis, I started shivering, because you're so right. You know, in a global community, when, you know, we don't get to see each other very often, you know, so you go to these events and you see people that you haven't seen since last year. And in my case, because I haven't been for the last couple of years, you know, you're seeing people who you maybe haven't seen for 2 or 3 years. It is so exciting. I can't wait. Just before we wrap it up, Dennis, we're talking about 2027, but there's a Phosphor G every year. So tell our listeners about 26.
Right, 26 will be in Hiroshima, and we will be there. We are very excited because last year the Phosphor G event was in Auckland, New Zealand, and that was the only Phosphor G I didn't attend in person, just because it is so far. Like, I could not justify flying 24 hours, just flying 24 hours to New Zealand to attend an event for 1 week. Japan, I will be there, mainly because I hope to take over on the last day and invite everybody who attends the event to please come to Bristol in the UK and attend the next event. Also, personally, I never been to Japan, and I gonna go there for the event, but not just for the event. Like, I will be there before doing a bit of work. I will be there afterwards doing holidays. And that is not to be underestimated, because you need to make a place appealing. Not just the event, but the place. For example, Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, which had the Phosphor G, we went there and we went on safari after the event, experienced the country. So that's what we're doing right now. We're thinking about, why would somebody from the US or from Tanzania or from Japan come to Bristol? We gotta have to make the place appealing. Not just like, okay, we can finance it. You can finance an event in a lot of locations, and there are big universities in a lot of cities, but why Bristol? And so that's what we're doing right now. We think making it appealing so you can go afterwards, like to Wales, enjoy the countryside. You might go to London afterwards for your personal holidays. There are great things to do in Bristol.
Yeah. And, you know, that's so, so important, you know, that, you know, if people are traveling in the summer season to go to a conference, it's a great opportunity. I mean, for lots of people anyway, they have to give up personal time to come to these conferences. They can't get the time always from work. And if you can combine it with a vacation, and it's your summer vacation, so you come for 3-5 days for the conference and then have another 5 or 7 days of vacation. You know, that's a great way to do it. Geotourism.
We didn't talk about the date. I mean, that's obviously an important factor. So, and also very sticky point. So as you said, it happens in the summer. That means in the UK summer. Auckland happened in November because it was in the Southern Hemisphere, same as like Belém was like in November. Hiroshima will be in August this year, end of August, first week in September. Unfortunately, we will not be able to do Bristol at that exact time. Due to the venue, we will have to do it at the beginning of July. And that may be a problem, because usually the regional events take place, such as Phosphor G Europe. However, Phosphor G Europe will not happen if the global Phosphor G is going to be in Europe. So we kind of need to ask, okay, that's the only time we can do it. And we know the Southern Hemisphere won't have a regional event at that time. So the only problem is really like with our North American peers who say, okay, if they do a Phosphor G North America at the same time, that would be unfortunate. But we kind of just got to have to find the consensus because we all want the event to happen. And we kind of have to accept you cannot please everyone. If you try to please everyone, then everybody will be unhappy because somebody can't do July, somebody can't do August, and it has to happen at some point.
And if you're using a university as the venue, then you have to be choosing a time when the students aren't there. It's simple.
Exactly.
And also, I mean, I know it's not everybody, but for those of us living in the Northern Hemisphere, July is central summer or the beginning of the summer vacation period. You know, it's not a bad period for lots of people in Europe. It's not so great in the Southern Hemisphere, but then no time that we choose would work, would match with their vacation periods probably. Okay, so Dennis, hopefully there's a few people listening who want to volunteer. There's hundreds and hundreds of people who are now thinking, let me put block out July serve 2027 for attending Phosphor G UK 2027. If people want to get in touch with you, who should they contact? How can they contact you?
Well, there's multiple ways. Obviously, as I said, I'm going to be at every GeoMob event, so please talk to me after the event at the GeoBS. Otherwise, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is kind of like my favorite social network. I'm on LinkedIn all the time, like on the phone, and I respond to every message I get on LinkedIn. Discourse. We use Discourse for OSGeo communication. So if there's anything concerning the event or OSGeo in general, please use Discourse because it is open source itself. Email. My email is out there in the public, so you can find it. Apart from that, I used to be on Twitter, now X, but I X'd that out due to, you know why.
That's okay.
I'm on Mastodon, but I really need to use it more.
Okay, so I've put your LinkedIn link in the show notes. So anyone who wants to contact you, the way to get Dennis is via his LinkedIn account. Dennis, it's been a pleasure. It's been really great fun talking to you. You've got one delegate signed up already sitting in North London. I'm really excited to be on this journey with you. I can't think of anything better than a Phosphor G next summer. So bring it on is all I can say. May the FOSS be with you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care.
I'm looking forward to talk to you again very soon.
Okay, take care, Dennis.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.